screen. The meeting reminders, please, if you're an EA voting member, put EA before your name. The meeting is being recorded for the public record. There might be press attending. Chat will not be entered into the public record, so if you want to have it in the meeting minutes, please raise your hand to be recognized. And should we have to vote on anything that actually requires yeses, noes, and abstentions, we'll use those reaction buttons. And we are going to start promptly at noon, so hopefully we're going to get peeps in here. I can't see how many participants we have at the moment because I'm sharing the screen, so.
We have 19 at the moment, now 20.
Wonderful. Rapidly climbing. Thank you, Bethany. Appreciate that. All right. Thank you, everyone. And I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order, the Employee Assembly meeting on Wednesday, November 3rd, 2025 at 12 p.m. Yvonne, if you can go ahead, please, with a roll call.
Good morning, everyone. As you hear your name, if you can please acknowledge that you are here, I would greatly appreciate it. We'll go ahead and get started. Mel Vanta.
Present.
Thank you. Victoria Bell.
Present.
Oh, thank you. RC Benda. Jennifer Best.
Present.
Adam Blakesley.
Present.
Ricky Bocher. Michael Boggs.
Present.
Gladys Brinkman. Sean Chang.
Present.
Carl Cornell.
Present.
Erica Crowley.
I'm here.
Bethany Dixon.
Present.
Jamie Doss. Alicia Erickson.
Present.
Kevin Fitch. Danielle Hill.
Present.
Rose Howard.
Present.
Kyle Carnuda. Ellie Crumpowers.
Hi, I'm here.
Jeremy Cruiser.
Present.
Sophie Lanches.
Present.
Yalberton Lucain.
I see him on Yvonne.
Yeah, I was like, did I hear something? Okay, thank you. David McDermott.
I am here, present.
PM Enders. Ann Morse.
Present.
Stephanie Rasu. Matthew Schneider.
Present.
Michelle Stefaniska Seymour. Kate Supron.
I'm here.
Deb Serene.
Present.
Wendy Treat.
Present. And Kyle Carnuda just got admitted as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Danielle Wearson.
Present.
Nikki Williams.
Present.
Thank you. And that is everyone. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Yvonne. All right. The land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayakono disposition and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Next on our agenda, really quick, is the approval of the November 19th, 2025 meeting minutes. They are hyperlinked in the agenda. They're also on Box if people could take a look at them really quick. And I would welcome a motion to approve by unanimous consent.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Do we have any dissent? Seeing no dissent, our minutes from the November 19th meeting are approved. Next item is call for late additions to the agenda. Do we have anything? Okay, I don't see any calls for late additions to the agenda, so we're going to start off by welcoming President Kolikoff and Vice President, Chief Human Resources Officer Christine Lovely to our meeting today. It'll be a 15-15-15 format. The first 15 minutes will be committee reports, and then President Kolikoff will give some remarks and comments, and then we will have a 15-minute Q&A with him and with VP Lovely. So, kicking off our committee reports, Yvonne, with the executive committee, please.
Yes, thank you. So we had our last meeting with our EA leadership meeting with VP CHRO Christine Lovely on November 17. We had a really good conversation clarifying the inclement weather planning and preparedness email. We talked about the priorities poll that and the ad hoc committee that we just developed. And connected us with the HR team to work on with us on that as well. We're able to reallocate some of the funds to or the funds to the George Peter Award. And we shared our concerns about the agreement to restore Cornell's federal research funding. And our next meeting is going to be on December 10th. That is all I got for now.
Great. Thanks, Yvonne. Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee, Victoria.
We have named our nomination for the George Peter Award as of this Monday, and those notifications are being sent out through our subcommittee, which is great. Aside from the George Peter Award, we are working towards our December EA Voice, and we are hoping to have it coincide with the January 8th President's Address to make sure we push that word out, as well as a January coffee hour. So we're working on a tight-ish timeline, but we're starting with good time to get it done. And our next meeting is going to be on the 14th. That'll be the last meeting for the semester.
Wonderful. Thank you, Victoria. Employee Education and Development Committee, Deb.
Hello, everyone. So our committee is continuing to refine our focus areas for this academic year. We met before Thanksgiving, and here are some of the areas that we're exploring. We're looking closely at career advancement challenges, in particular, internal mobility to sort of get yourself ready to be a leader. Being in a remote role makes that progression harder. So we're also hearing concerns about non-traditional training and certifications and how those are recognized in the hiring process, particularly for leadership roles. We're generative AI education is on our radar. We've raised questions about ethical, environmental, and privacy impacts and are in conversations with Cornell's AI team to address these concerns. We're exploring ways to improve access to part-time study opportunities and have discussed creating a centralized list of available classes for employees. In addition, creating a possible staff ambassador program is under consideration to support those degree seeking employees. Leadership development is another priority. Programs like Harold D. Kraft Leadership Program and Turning Point are not easily accessible for remote employees. And there are currently no programs that develop leaders who work remotely. They're primarily remote. And so we've raised this concern with the Office of Organizational Development and Effectiveness. And we're exploring if there are options through possibly through eCornell. Finally, we're developing a communication guide for employee assembly representatives to strengthen our engagement with our constituents, especially in remote settings. And so we'll be soliciting feedback from all of you in the coming months to compile this sort of a handy guide. Additionally, I'm serving as rep for our committee on this priorities poll survey to staff, and I look forward to working on this group and coming up with some great questions to survey our employees. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Deb. With our Employee Welfare Committee, Marcy.
Hi, yes, good afternoon. Our charge is pretty broad, but so we have a lot of discussions. One of the things we discussed were the town halls over the summer. I appreciated all the information that was brought forth from them, but there were kind of different messages in different town halls, but it was, it changed as the message changed. So the final town hall at the Beck College felt a bit more optimistic than some of the others. So that was discussed. Decided the benefits committee would manage any transportation and parking concerns. There's some discussion about the financial austerity. Many employees were feeling anxious about their job security and the ongoing Huron study. Much discussion around increasing costs to employees with SIP, which has some discrepancies and doesn't make up for increased parking and health benefits. Many people are finding a little bit pressure of having to do a little bit more work with less employees through retirements and attrition. Holiday event planning, we discussed some of that. Some units are feeling a little bit more stressed than others. Some units aren't having any plans. I know here at the Vet College, we scaled back and we're doing a little bit more potlucks and cookie exchanges. We've created a subgroup. Carl Cornell is working on the next priorities poll. Discussion about the CME project, reiterating it's more about consolidating software and centralizing databases. And shamelessly plugging the CARE Fund, ways that you can help other employees, the Cornell Emergency CARE Fund, the ELFS program, the CVM Patient Assistance Fund, and also catastrophic leave donations. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Marcy. And next, Benefits and Policy Committee, Ellie.
Hi there. I am a grant and contract officer in the Office of Sponsors Program. So I wanted to take a moment and say thank you for your ongoing communication efforts, the town halls, federal transition, weekly updates, other various emails. I found those very beneficial in understanding where Cornell stands. And wanted to mention that the Research Matters campaign is fabulous, and I hope that continues. This committee monitors, reviews, recommends changes to the benefits and policies that affect entire Cornell. So our priority during this team is to work closely with HR to ensure there's additional clear communication about upcoming changes, particularly the cost to our insurance and health programs, and how to best navigate this in the future. We're discussing ongoing TCAT and parking concerns, as well as how paid time off is used and understood across various departments. And we meet biweekly on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Ellie. And finally, Elections Committee, Stephanie.
Hey, thank you. In terms of the election committee, we don't have a ton of updates for the fall semester since so much happens in each spring semester, but my committee has met and we've gone over a draft election schedule for the spring, and we've also reviewed our election rules. And I am going to be meeting with the Office of Assemblies, I believe it's next week, to have some more finality to our schedule. And then I will be planning in the new year to be presenting this to the Employee Assembly Committee so we can formally vote on the election schedule before everything starts happening. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie. Before I hand this over to President Kotloff and VP Lovely, there are a couple of other individuals that I would like to recognize and welcome. One of them is Interim Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer Sean Muller, and then also our new Vice President for University Relations, Kyle Kimball. They've both joined us on this call as well. And then additionally, you heard through the committee reports that we are going to be doing the Employee Assembly Priorities Poll. We did establish an ad hoc committee for that, and the chair of that committee is Carl Cornell. I apologize that I didn't include him in our committee reports, but I honestly wasn't sure whether he'd have much of a report because we just did this at our last EA meeting. So that said, I defer to you, President Kotloff, for your comments and remarks.
Thanks very much, Wendy, and good afternoon, everybody. Maybe I just start by acknowledging the fabulous work of Christine Lovely, who's here with me today. And Christine is taking a new position in California, closer to her family. She's done tremendous work at Cornell. She's just a model of professionalism. So I just wanted to acknowledge in front of the employee assembly our debt and thanks to Christine. And we can applaud. And then also to thank Sean Mueller, who's stepping in as interim vice president for human resources. And Sean has been at Cornell for a number of years. He came to Cornell from Penn State, and also a terrific professional individual in HR, and somebody that we're going to rely on in the coming months and years. So with that, maybe I'll just, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I'll just make a couple comments that I've made in the two town halls that we've had since the federal settlement. And just to reiterate that I am very pleased with where we came out after 8 months of negotiations with the federal government. Of course, no agreement is perfect, and the fact that we're paying $30 million to the federal treasury to be able to resolve these OCR complaints, you know, is not an ideal outcome. But the thing that I was most focused on was making sure that the agreement itself was something that represented Cornell's principles. And that agreement compels Cornell to follow the law, something that we do and should be doing, following the OCR complaints. And during these negotiations, we had a very careful audit of all of our policies and processes throughout the university. It caused us to focus more on those, making sure none of them are discriminating in any way, and that all of them are compliant with the law. Of course, after SCOTUS, we made a number of changes in our admissions policies, make sure we were compliant with the law. So all of this, I'm happy, and now I will be certifying personally under penalty of a prosecution that we are complying with the law. But importantly to me, in addition to that, we are making that determination, and I am certifying it. We don't have a monitor overseeing us. We don't have data that the government is not entitled to by law that we're submitting to the government for their approval. We are, none of our processes or policies are changed by this agreement. And that was very important, that we maintain our autonomy and our independence, and that we also make sure that we're not discriminating against anyone and that we're obeying the law. In addition to that, we will provide data to the government that they're entitled to by law, that is the admissions, de-identified admissions data. We've done that in the past when requested. Now we'll do that on a regular basis. And as I say, we will be providing $30 million to the federal treasury, and we'll be making a $30 million investment over 3 years in our own research around agriculture, sustainable agriculture, bringing technology into agriculture, helping farmers, helping sustain an agricultural production, which is very, very important for our stakeholders, for New York State, and something that's part of our overall mission. So glad to answer any questions on that, but I do point out to people that are concerned about a couple things. One is, this is not a fine, it's not a penalty, we're not a, the government and Cornell have agreed that we are not admitting any guilt associated with these OCR complaints, but they will be removed as part of this settlement. So all those will go away, our grants will come back. And importantly, if the government has concerns about Cornell's policies or behaviors in the future, they will have to go through court to make, you know, the legal processes to make those concerns manifest. Additionally, we will, so the other concern that I hear quite often is around these federal guidelines, which are really guidelines from the government. It's the government's view of what they would like to see universities do. They're not law, but we will be providing those as a resource for our faculty in training. We have lots of resources. We have a comprehensive training process around hiring, and those guidelines will be one element of many elements. And most importantly, the most important element there is civil rights law, how to hire people without discriminating, et cetera. So all of that, I think, is fully aligned, as I say, with Cornell's principles. And we did not, as I promised the community when we started this, that we would not cross these red lines. Second area, of course, that is of concern, and I see many of those concerns in the questions from the EA, is around Resilient Cornell and both ongoing communication for Resilient Cornell and I hear a little bit still this, why are we still doing Resilient Cornell now that we have a settlement with the federal government? And as we said in all of our town halls, as KB and I said in the 18 town halls, and I've said in other town halls, unfortunately, our only concern, our only financial challenge is not the federal government withholding grant funds. We have many, many headwinds that we're facing. Some of those relate to rapid acceleration of costs, increase in staff, a rapid increase in staff post-COVID, increase in inflationary costs associated with buildings, with union contracts, with virtually everything we do. Financial aid costs have accelerated as well. And we're anticipating reductions in our overhead, so the costs of doing research for the federal government. We're anticipating endowment tax will probably be eligible for that endowment tax next year. And then a number of other costs, legal costs and others that have really combined to compel Cornell to really make sure that we're operating as efficiently as possible and we're financially secure for the future. That's in all of our interests as in the Cornell community. So with that, Wendy, should I go to the questions directly or do you wanna ask for questions on those comments?
Well, however it works best for you, President Kolikoff, I was going to open the floor up to live questions. If we don't get any, then we can go over to the pre-submitted questions. So if anyone does have a question for President Kolikoff, please raise your hand. And there we go. Jeremy, go ahead.
Sure. I apologize for the background. It's the only opportunity I have to get any exercise during the day. So I'm in my basement. President Kolikoff, you talked about the additional financial stresses being faced by Cornell, and speaking for myself and I assume others, we are also, the staff of Cornell, feeling that strain and increasing cost of living, increasing just everything in the area. How are we addressing both the concerns of Cornell and the staff that make Cornell possible?
Yeah, I absolutely recognize that, Jeremy. And part of that are costs that are increasing that the university is seeing and passing on. We'll talk about, healthcare costs or health insurance costs. We have a process every year, we'll see this play out again, where we take the employee cost index, the best indicator of what the cost increase is for our employees, and then use that as the basis for our SIP process. Of course, we do SIP on a cycle in July, and individuals will see that. But we have our benefits program that is off cycle in January, and we'll see increases in January, unfortunately, that will overcome the SIP for the second half of year for many employees. It's something that we're really struggling with because these are real increases that we're seeing in healthcare costs. There are increases that all of us are in our utilization of the healthcare system are generating these increased costs. So part of that is around the way that healthcare is delivered, the drugs that are used, et cetera, but they are real costs. We are trying to blunt some of those costs at the university level, but we're not able to blunt all of those costs. So I certainly appreciate and am concerned about the increase in costs and the fact that for some of our employees, this is a particularly difficult time. We've tried in the past, and we will in the future, to try and engineer our SIP in the most progressive way that we can. That is, dedicate as much as possible to the lower incomes in our community. I see I was asked a question about leadership's restraint of their SIP. We didn't announce this publicly, but the past SIP cycle, we constrained leadership SIP below the SIP of other employees. So we had a sort of very baseline increase for leadership. That was a way to try and direct as much of our revenue as possible to our employees at the lower end of the pay scale. But all of this, I'm afraid, is a reality for all of us.
Great, thanks. I'm going to switch between pre-submitted questions and live questions just so that you all that have your hands up are aware. What message of support would you share with Cornell's LGBTQ plus community in the wake of the federal government's recent anti-gender passport policy and the recent agreement between Cornell and the federal government?
Yeah, we support all of our, everyone in our community, every gender orientation, sexual orientation, and any individual is a welcome part of this community. It's one of the reasons that we did not agree to comply, for example, with the Justice Department's guidelines around Title VI and civil rights law, because some of those guidelines went beyond civil rights law and directly affected our LGBTQ plus policy, and some of them violated or were in conflict with New York state law. We will abide by New York state law, and we will continue to protect everyone in this community and make sure that anything that we do in our policies is fully justified by the law, which protects all of us.
Great, thank you. Kyle, you had your hand up?
Yes, thank you, President Kotlikoff. I'm really excited that you came and spoke with us today. My question is, I represent the CALS staff, and my question is about the $30 million not part of the settlement, but the other $30 million in agricultural research, which we're obviously really excited about. But I still don't have clarity on where that funding is coming from, because it sounds like this is part of recurring or planned investments. But then also for the staff specifically, so not the faculty side, but staff maybe in Cornell Cooperative Extension, for example, do we have a plan for how we might be able to leverage those dollars for research and activations?
Yeah, so they are part of the settlement, Kyle, and we are committed to using $10 million of Cornell money a year as additional research support in the area of agriculture and agricultural technology. And right now, the Cornell Research Office and Gary Koretsky is putting together an RFP process where individuals will apply for that funding, and the most meritorious applications will be funded through that process. It'll be $10 million a year. I will say it's mainly around, you know, investment in research. So it's not, you know, some people have asked me, well, will it fund Future Farmers of America, or will it be for, you know, outreach to specific farms? It really is an investment in Cornell research to try and lift all the boats in agriculture, and particularly small farmers who can benefit by increased technology.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Surely.
Back to our pre-submitted questions. Do you have any updates or information you can share regarding the consulting firm that has been brought on board to review, advise reorganization efforts? Could you share how much this may be costing the university?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into the contract with the external firm, but I will tell you everything that we know about it. So we had a RFP process to look at consultants who would come in. These are generally consultants who've done this at other universities and looked at how universities are organized and how they can be organized in the most efficient way. And so we had an RFP process. All the major consulting firms were submitted as part of that process. And we chose Huron, which is a very focused academic consulting organization. They have consulted most recently with MIT, with Hopkins, I think with Brown as well. And they presented the best case at how to think about, gather data, think about what we do, and try and make our processes as efficient as possible. And some of that will be, you know, organizationally, improvements in an organization. So for example, you know, we have different organizations, this campus, Weill Cornell Medicine. And so we'll unify a lot of these processes and then try and deploy technology as much as possible. At the same time, Huron is also overseeing, had previously been selected for our CME project. And that's also an extremely important project where, rather than every, you know, college and every campus having different software that they've developed to do a certain task, we'll all be on the same platforms, every campus, and we'll all be doing the same processes. That itself will have an enormous effect in terms of data availability for the campus and understanding what we're doing, but also in terms of simplifying this sort of work process that we have, which we've made very complicated by having so many versions of it. So Huron, and we've embedded one of the financial analysts of Huron in Cornell. He's been here for some period of time. His name is Andrew Laws. You may have seen him on some of the podcasts, et cetera, or town halls. And Andrew is now understanding our systems very deeply and our culture very deeply, and putting forward suggestions that will match Cornell's culture.
Great, thank you. Back to a live question, Carl.
Hi, thanks for coming to talk to us today. UKB and I briefly discussed this after the town hall, but I really wanted to again implore the significance of cost increases being communicated with us as early as possible. And additionally, it would be really great if we could think about putting processes into place to get these numbers out a little earlier. It would probably be, there's probably some ability for someone to do a little financial projection in June to get us prepared for any significant increases in the future. So not a question, but more just an idea for the future.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. And I remember that conversation. And we do, you know, we have, I'll turn maybe to Christine around the timing and the pace on particularly, you know, our benefits packages. When we understand the increases, when we make those decisions about what the cost has been in the previous year and how we have to increase the benefits pool to cover it. I don't know if Christine or Sean, you want to make a comment about that.
Yeah, I will just share that, You know, as with many things, there's sort of a rhythm and a timing by which we get the information. So it's challenging to share, you know, what you just don't fully have an understanding of. And, you know, to date, the information's been shared as quickly as possible after we have the information to share in a more specific way. I don't, you know, want us to be irresponsible and get out ahead of things when we don't have complete information. And so that's what's kind of driven the timelines to date. But I will share some feedback with our team just to make sure that there's not something that we're, you know, sort of missing in this process that would allow for us to share sooner. So I will share that feedback.
Thank you. I think the alternative of that is that there's a lot of employees who did not budget for a $200 increase a month and are now going into one of the most expensive seasons of the year, knowing that now they also have to save money for that. So I would personally think that we should be a little more cautious about springing those, especially on the last day or the day that open enrollment starts. But thank you. I hear you.
Great. Thanks, Carl. Back to one of our pre-submitted questions. As Cornell continues to navigate financial austerity and organizational restructuring, what is the plan to maintain transparent and consistent communication with the community? So it kind of goes to Carl's comment just now of getting information out sooner. Once recommendations are finalized and implementation begins, what mechanisms such as email updates, town halls, and other forums will be used to keep us informed and engaged?
Maybe I'll turn to Kyle for this. I know we have a, you know, a website that we've stood up around that provides constant information on resilient Cornell. Kyle, comments on this?
Yeah, so I would just encourage folks to check out the Resilient Cornell website. I'll look it up and put it in the chat. That's going to be our main channel for distributing information about what's going on in the process. We actually just updated it, I believe yesterday or either yesterday or this morning, for the information around the design groups that are actually happening and which groups they're happening in. And so that's there. And we also, we've obviously been getting the question around sort of the need for Resilient Cornell in light of the federal agreement. So we sort of cross-posted some of the answers from the FAQ around the federal agreement onto the Resilient Cornell website to amplify that messaging around. But that'll be the main distribution site for that. And we'll put, anytime we update the Resilient Cornell website, we're going to put it in faculty and staff news.
Great, thank you. And actually, I was just going to echo that. I would strongly suggest, recommend, and encourage staff to please read the faculty staff news. Please go to these websites. The committees are there. And, you know, just kind of pay attention, talk with your colleagues, talk with individuals that are involved with the EA. They might have a little more insight as to when town halls and such are being scheduled. On the flip side of that, though, I would hope that if there are town halls scheduled, taking into consideration holidays, the example I'm going to use is last week was the Future of the American University staff town hall was held on Monday, the 24th, the week of Thanksgiving, when there may have been staff taking that week off, or schools might have been out of session and staff may have been doing family commitments, that sort of thing. I am going to call on Linda to submit a question. And then also Zoe, just so you're aware, chat is not recognized for us. So if you would like to ask that question, you can certainly raise your hand and we'll recognize you as well. So Linda, go ahead with your question, please.
Okay, thank you. I'm Linda Ensike. I'm part of Research and Innovation Unit. And I put my question into the chat in case there's not a clear understanding. But basically, I read the statement and the settlement agreement. And there's a section 18 particularly, where the word employee interview make me pause. So it's why I wanted to ask more question about what do you think will be those employee interview? And if it's happened that the government are requesting those interview, which type of employee can be be requested to be interviewed, and which type of representations those employees can have.
So, Linda, is this in relation to our research compliance for foreign?
Correct.
So, all that is doing, there's nothing that's changed, I guess would be my answer. That is really enshrining what we're already required to do as part of our research compliance with the federal government. So there is no anticipated additional interviews of employees or visits or anything. It's simply saying that we're complying with those regulations. And before this, the government has always had the opportunity to come in and audit our systems and say, are you in compliance? The difference now is they can only do it. They can only punish us if let's say they come in and they find we're not compliant in some area. They have to go through a legal process to do anything about that. And rather than simply asserting that we're out of compliance or we're discriminated or something like that and withholding our grants.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, we have enough time for one more pre-submitted question, and then Zoe is a live question. So for the pre-submitted question, in the face of rising living costs, sharply increasing health insurance premiums, and ongoing uncertainty about workforce reductions and reorganization, what concrete steps can Cornell take to significantly increase the percentage of staff positions filled by internal candidates? HR has shared with the Employee Assembly less than 2 years ago that only about 37% of Workday postings were filled internally, and most of those were union or D-band roles. Investing in training and promoting current employees not only rewards experienced Cornell staff, but also keeps more payroll dollars in Tompkins County and neighboring communities. Can the university commit to a strategy that meaningfully expands internal hiring and advancement opportunities for current staff?
Can I
Yeah,
respond to this one, Mike?
please. Thank you. I was going to ask for you to do it. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I was just going to say that today at the Employee Excellence Award, there was a team that was recognized, and that was the Phenom team. And a huge part of where we're headed in the future relates to this process that we're setting up an internal talent marketplace that's guided by this new technology that we have available to us. And it's going to take us into the future and how we look at searches and how internal talent even becomes aware of positions. It's really exciting. And I just urge everyone to explore that a bit more and just know that that's sort of the wave of the future is making opportunities more readily available to our internal talent pools. And this technology allows and supports for that direction. So I'm really excited about that and where it takes us moving forward. So this is something that is on everyone's radar, and we're well aware of the desire for there to be more opportunities for personal development and professional development and sort of opportunities to advance. And so this is directly hitting on that point and something that we're really proud of in human resources.
Great, thank you very much. I appreciate that. We're going to call on Zoe, and if we have enough time, I'll call on you, Rose, if not, because we also have Deputy Provost Avery August here to speak about the Task Force for Institutional Voice. So I just want to make sure that we cover everyone. So, Zoe, please go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you, President Kalkoff, for coming and speaking to us. My question regards the health insurance premiums. And while acknowledging that our premiums have been equal across all salaries, I'm wondering why, with such a significant and sudden increase in those premiums, why that burden is being applied equally rather than equitably. Because the same dollar amount is going to be a far greater burden to the lower wage employees that are already suffering the most.
Yeah, I certainly acknowledge your point here. I don't know. I'm going to turn to Christine. I don't know if we've never had differential or progressive benefit charges or health insurance charges. And I don't know if we're capable of doing that in our system, how that would work long term. What you're suggesting is something we've really not done in the past, but I turn to Christine to walk us through that issue.
I'll just clarify at the outset that increases vary based on individual circumstances, not based on salary. So I understand the concept of what you're proposing is that for people that are equally situated in terms of their circumstances, that everyone wouldn't bear the same level of increase. I get the concept, but actually applying that in a benefit situation would be highly complex to do, to say the least. And I'm not sure if there's legal parameters around that as well that might come into play, but this is feedback that I will take back to the team for us to look at and see if there is a viable way to look at something like that. I just honestly don't know, but I do know that if this were a direction that we were to move in, it would be a significant undertaking that might take a bit of time, but this is an idea that I haven't really heard explored or fleshed out. So we'll do the work and see if that's something that's viable for us to consider.
Great. Thanks,
Thank you very
Christine.
much.
Rose, I'm very sorry. We need to keep on track. So I thank President Kalikoff, VP, lovely interim VP Mueller, and VP Kimball, a lot of acronyms and VPs for joining us for today's meeting. Appreciate it. Again, I'll put in the chat. If you have any questions that you would like some follow-up on, feel free. I will accept all of them and then relay them to the appropriate individuals and offices. Also, as I just stated in the chat, and I'll repeat it for everyone so that they know, our annual President's Address to Staff will be held on Thursday, January 8th from 12 to 1 in G10 Biotech. So there will be another opportunity for staff to ask questions at that point as well. So thank you again for joining us, Christine. It's been amazing. Thank you so much for all of your support and guidance for staff. And we will definitely miss you. Sean, we're looking forward to working with you. Thank you again, President Kalikoff and Kyle, for joining us.
Thank you all. Thanks for everything you do for Cornell. And Rose, if you have that question, you can email me directly. Thank you all.
Spectacular. Thank you. Moving on to our next business of the day item, we are joined by Deputy Provost Avery August, who is leading the Task Force on Institutional Voice. Avery, I've been told that you are on the call. You do have screen, or should have screen sharing capabilities if you so desire.
Great. Thank you, Wendy. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm gonna share some slides with you all. Let me just do that. And again, really appreciate the opportunity to come to this group and share the work of the Presidential Task Force on Institutional Voice. So I'm here representing the task force. My co-chair is Yen Zolin, who's the dean of the law school. And I'm going to go over very quickly. Hopefully, you've had a chance to look at the draft report, but really wanted to. We're going around to the various assemblies and groups to share our preliminary report, which will then be finalized based on your feedback to a final report. So our charge was to think about and make recommendations for best practices and guidance for if and when the university exercises its voice. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but the important thing to keep in mind here is this is a recommendation or guidance, and it's not policy. And I contrast that with the expressive activity policy, which is formal policy and had a more robust, extensive process for developing. That led to its issuance last year. So this is really recommendations for how the institution should be thinking about using its voice. And also, we were asked to discuss a process below the level of university leadership for how members of our community could participate in exercising a collective voice as well. The other thing I wanted to emphasize as well is this does not address the individual voices of the community. So my individual voice as a member of the community is not affected by these recommendations or guidance. We're free to express our voices within the Cornell community as we see fit. So the task force members were here. It was taken from across the university, including Cornell Tech. Really, really appreciated working with my colleagues that you see here. Spent a lot of time in the spring semester and into the summer, really thinking very carefully about this issue. We were announced and informed in April of 2025. Of course, you know there was a lot happening at that time. The task force included, as I said, members of Ithaca, Cornell Tech, and Weill. We spent some time really getting robust feedback from across the university, including faculty, staff, and students. We had listening sessions. We had an email box that was received suggestions. We had a questionnaire. We also looked at other institutional policies, including the Calvin Report, sort of perhaps the original of its kind, issued in the late 1960s, and more recently, some of our peers who've developed similar approaches. We consulted with external experts who think and write about this issue. And then we then developed and got together and wrote the recommendations. And then we issued the draft in October. And so that's now public on the Task Force for Institutional Voice website. And now we're going around to the various assemblies and groups to both give you a quick overview of what the recommendations are, but also encourage you to solicit to send in feedback. That says November 14th. Of course, we've just gotten a chance to meet with you all, and so we're still receiving feedback on this, and so you can continue to do that. We will then pull all that those recommendations together and then issue a final report that will then guide the leadership on this. Again, not policy, but recommendations or guidance. Also want to say that the timeline here was compressed because we were acting fairly quickly in trying to develop these recommendations. And a lot of the feedback we get were influenced by, you know, events that were happening nationally and locally. So in terms of the institution using its voice, we got feedback that ranged from the institution to speak often on every single matter to feedback that says the institution should never, ever speak regardless of what's happening. And so we, you know, the task force had to grapple with these dynamics and these differences. So here's sort of the big summary here. What is institutional restraint? So we are recommending that the institution practices restraint when it uses its voice. And what that means is a thoughtful and nuanced appreciation for Cornell's mission and then tailoring its voice to its mission so that, you know, using reasonable circumstances, prudence, and exercising its mission. This contrasts to the commonly touted expectation for institutions that came out of the Calvin Report that institutions should be neutral. And neutrality in and of itself says something, you know, the institution is also speaking in being neutral. And so the task force was really clear that we did not expect neutrality from the institution, but some restraint in terms of when it speaks. I would also add that even the Calvin Report that is pointed to as a model for institutional neutrality exercises exceptions for the institution's being able to speak when it is threatened. So it's not that the institution have to remain silent under all circumstances. The second is the institution, you know, can speak. It doesn't have to, but can speak when matters are germane to its mission, values, and functions, and that the president and the provost are the designated individuals or offices that speak for the institution. Any other leader or member of our community do not speak for the university. And of course, they can delegate, for example, to the vice president for university relations, Kyle Kimball, as you just met, to speak. And then below the level of the provost and the president and the provost, Deans, as institution leaders, have some capacity to speak on various issues, and I'll go into that in a minute. Chairs, but not individual members. As I said, this does not affect individual members. So one of the things we wanted to do is start with first principles. That is, Cornell's mission is really important for what we do here at Cornell. We have a core mission, we have values, we have functions. These are clearly defined. Our values are clearer than we have these five core values. Our mission is clearly defined as an educational institution to discover and preserve and disseminate knowledge. We do a lot across New York State. As part of our extension function, we operate two hospitals, the Animal Hospital, Human Hospital in New York City. We provide clinical care. We have a law school. So there are a wide range of things that Cornell does as part of its mission. And of course, in our any person, any study ethos. So that was the core set of principles that we wanted to filter if and when the institution speaks through these issues. The recommendation is that the institution should use its voice when Cornell's mission is being affected. And so this could be, academic freedom, freedom of inquiry, access to education that are linked to our mission, as well as more specific aspects of our mission that are threatened. However, it is not the place, as the task force said, for the university's leader to speak on matters not germane to Cornell's mission. We also recognize and underline that the individual voices of the university's constituents can rise to the surface and has a robust range of ideas and opinions through both free expression and academic freedom that can ensure open dialogue within the university community. And that is not the university speaking, that is individuals within the university speaking. So this concept of institutional restraint, as I alluded to earlier, we did not recommend institutional neutrality, although there were those who whom we heard that advocated for this. And that is because restraint, it allows the institution to speak in a thoughtful and nuanced way when its mission is impacted. But if the topic falls outside of the core mission, then the institution, we recommend that the institution really think about whether speech is required or appropriate for that. And so, of course, discretion there will be really important. So there are two criteria that the task force recommends for leaders of the institution to think about when they're thinking about exercising this voice. And either of these criteria could apply. So one, the issue directly affects the core mission of the university, it issues the background conditions that make the core mission of the university possible. And so those are two things that the institution's leaders could use as a way of evaluating whether it's appropriate to speak at that time. And again, there's no requirement to speak, but there's the ability to speak could be determined by these two principles. Again, only the president and the provost are the designated spokespeople for the institution, although again, the vice president for university relations can do that if delegated. You notice there's a star next to provost there, and that's because we have a provost for medical affairs who in their capacity as dean at the medical school and provost of medical affairs may speak under certain circumstances for the institution. In other words, in addition, the chairs of the board of trustees speak for the board of trustees, not for the university, but for the board of trustees. We've gotten feedback on some of this as well. So some of this is the original language that we proposed, and we've gotten feedback on some of these, where the Weill Cornell Board of Fellows, for those of you who are aware of the situation at Weill Cornell Medicine, they have a subset of individuals outside the institution that advise the leadership, that we will be removing that from the recommendations. But again, either way, they should follow the principles. Deans, again, do not speak for the university regardless of the situation. However, deans are scholars in and of themselves, and so they can certainly speak in their scholarly activity, although they should be clear that when they're exercising their voice, that they're speaking as a scholar. But it's quite possible that the dean of a school might speak for that school. For example, the dean of the vet school might speak on issues of animal care, if that's being impacted, or the dean of the Brooks School of Public Policy might speak as the dean of the Brooks School with regards to public policy. And so there are situations where, again, through these two principal criteria, deans may feel the need to speak within their scholarly expertise and within the school's expertise for the school, but also can speak as in their own scholarly right. Similarly, academic departments and other organized subunits can decide that their particular missions are impacted in a similar fashion, depending on the discipline. And so departments can exercise their voices collectively, but we recommend, and I recommend that you look at the recommendations carefully, a process for departments deciding how to do that and when to do that, including voting, including publishing that in not on the department's website, but sort of a separate part. So it's clear that this is a collective, a set of collective individuals who are coming together to speak, and there's a process for doing that, analogous to the faculty senate or the assemblies. You know, when the assemblies speak, you vote and you publish that vote. So with that, well, I'm happy to take questions now, but really also want to encourage you to do provide us feedback as you look at the draft report. We've received a lot of feedback so far. The report will change and evolve based on this feedback. But what I just shared with you are the principles that was initially released in October. Thank again for the opportunity to share this with you.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Avery. We do appreciate it. We have a couple of minutes for questions. I want to try and keep us on track with our meeting times. So if anyone has any questions for Avery, please feel free to raise your hand. Avery, there's an email where people can reach you as well, correct?
That's correct. It's tfiv@cornell.edu. I'll put it in the chat really quickly so you can have that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Awesome. All right. Seeing that we don't have any questions for you, you're off the hook, Avery. Congratulations. Again, if you have any questions for Avery or for the rest of the task force, please feel free to email them, tfiv@cornell.edu. And thanks again. So with that, we actually are going to close our business of the day and move on to our liaison reports. The university, thanks again, Avery. Appreciate it. Liaison reports, UA Campus Codes Committee, Ricky?
Ricky's not here.
Never mind. Okay, so we don't have anything to report there. Let's move over to UA Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment. Ellie, do you have any updates for us?
Sorry, I did hear from them. They were trying to get something scheduled, but I haven't heard back.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks, Marcy. Appreciate it. UA Campus Welfare Committee, either Gladys or Danielle?
Nothing to report. Thanks, Wendy.
Okay, great. Also, I know 1 o'clock is sometimes we do have people hop off. I do ask that you please kind of stay through the end of the meeting because I do have some announcements to make during open discussion. So please, 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 if you can stay for another 14 minutes, would really appreciate it. If not, feel free to reach out to me and I'll follow up with you. Moving over to Campus Planning Committee, Mel or Kate?
No new updates at this time.
Great, thank you. Yvonne, any updates with the Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board?
No updates.
Jeremy, I'm guessing there are no updates as well for Committee for Campus Constituency Elected Trustees. Is Jeremy still on? All right, we don't have any updates for that one as well. And lastly, Faculty Senate, Danielle?
Nada. Nothing. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. You were kind of cutting in and out.
Yeah, nothing. No update.
All right, awesome. Okay, closing that part of our agenda. Going to open discussion, before I open it up to everyone, I have a couple of announcements that I would like to make. Some of them are reminders, some of them are new info, new details. Just a reminder, if you have any of our floating holidays that were given to us, or you have a vacation overage, if you're over the max of your vacation, please, 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 please use them by December 31st, because you will lose them. Our next meeting on December 17th is going to be our hybrid meeting. We do have a tentative location that hasn't been confirmed yet, but tentatively it will be in MBR 1153. We're waiting for confirmation from the Office of the Assemblies on that venue. We are going to have a special meeting for the listening session that Dean Love requested for the campus codes of conduct review process and all that sort of thing. So that's going to be held on Monday, January 26th at our usual meeting time. So it'll start at noon and go until 1:15. And as mentioned previously, if you didn't get a chance to ask President Kolakoff any questions, you will have another opportunity to do so at the President's Address to Staff, which will be held on Thursday, January 8th, 2026, from 12 until 1 in G10 Biotech. I'm going to look to my exec committee team to tell me if I forgot anything. I don't think I did.
Go ahead, Rose.
You were going to bring up something that we talked about in chat about the award.
Oh, gosh, yes. Okay, so the other thing as well. So speaking of awards, so it was a good reminder because this morning was actually the Employee Excellence Awards that are run kind of through HR and the President's Office. But the Employee Assembly ourselves, we have our own Employee Assembly Appreciation Award. I will actually put the link in chat really quick, but if you go to our website and under Employee Assembly and under Awards, you will see information about Employee Assembly Appreciation Award. This is one that we as Employee Assembly members can nominate groups. It really just says it's an award that's given to a group of employees who in the past year have gone above and beyond in their support of the university. Nominations are accepted from Employee Assembly members only, and the winner is selected internally by the Employee Assembly. The winning group is recognized during the annual President's Address to Staff, says each fall, because historically it was held in the fall. I apologize because I did kind of drop the ball on this. There will be a more formal email reminder going out to everyone about the process and when the deadline will be to submit your nomination. There's not a Qualtrics or anything, I believe, in the past. And Kyle, you can maybe back me up on this because you nominated last year's winner. It's just you nominate the group and give us a reason why you think they should be nominated. But yes, there will be a more formal email going out about that. So. That all said, I'm going to open up the floor to anyone else that may have any items that they would like to bring up for open discussion. Yes, Carl.
Hey, I just wanted to give a report on where the committee is for the ad hoc committee for the priorities poll. I do have a committee put together. It involves HR representation, representation from the executive, education, wellness, communication, and benefits and policy committees. It also has two non-EA member representations. One of them is a DEI staff member as well. I have met with Jessica, who had some discussion about past polls and future polls. And the committee's first meeting will be held on December 9th, that's next Tuesday, from 2:30 to 3:30. And I just have a quick question for the executive committee. In the past, we have given out we've given out random prizes for people who have filled out the application. So we pick a random person who filled out the application and give them a small monetary award. That was not included in this budget, but maybe could I talk to someone about having an award stipend or award amount for a random poll taker to get more participation in the polls in the future? And if so, who would I talk to?
I'm finance. I'll run it by Jessica to see how that would be handled. But I think depending on amounts we're talking about, that seems reasonable if there's a precedent for it.
There is.
Yeah, I was going to say, let us check with, we'll check with Office of the Assemblies on that. But yeah, that would be Danielle's purview as Vice Chair of Ops and Finance. Appreciate that, though. And yes, to get some more engagement and, you know, hey, who doesn't want some awards points? That's always a fun, you know, fun thing to do. Anything else for open discussion? If not, I will reiterate again, please, 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 by all means, if you have floating holidays left, if you have days of vacation that you need to use up by the 31st, please do that. Find some time between now and then to use those days so you don't lose them. Again, our meeting on the 17th will be a hybrid meeting. Tentatively, we're going to be in MVR 1150, room 1153. We are going to be joined by Dr. Kwong, who is the Director of Faculty Staff and Staff Assistance Program. So he'll have some information and resources for us for our mental health, wellness, and that sort of thing. Other than that, I really just wanted to say to all of you, thank you so much for everything that you're doing every day for the university. It has not been an easy go of things during this year, so I do appreciate, and just this for me, appreciate everything everyone is doing. I hope everyone had a restful holiday break, and upcoming has a restful winter break as well. So that being said, if we don't have, oh, yes, Carl.
I motion to adjourn by unanimous consent.
I was just about to say, if we don't have anything else for open discussion, I would more than welcome a motion to adjourn by unanimous consent. Rose is seconding. Do I have any dissent on that? Seeing no dissent, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Have a lovely rest of your day, and I will be in touch with you all regarding the Employee Assembly Appreciation Award later this afternoon or tomorrow. Thanks.
Thanks.